troops and Palestinians in the mosque and its courtyards. The Israeli attack caused fires at the main entrance of Al-Qubli Mosque, but local firefighters working in the Islamic Waqf Department managed to contain it before it spread. Many residents were injured and received treatment by Palestinian medics in the mosque clinic. In addition, soldiers stationed at the gates leading to Al-Aqsa prevented dozens of worshippers from entering the mosque courtyards, especially through Bab Hatta and the chain gate. The soldiers then assaulted many Palestinians and started pushing them away. The removal of the worshippers was carried out while dozens of Israeli fanatics gathered nearby and marched into the mosque courtyards under heavy army and police accompaniment. On Monday at dawn, Israeli soldiers have kidnapped four Palestinian children in Atur village in occupied East Jerusalem. The Wadi Hilwa Information Center in Silwan in Jerusalem said that the soldiers invaded and ransacked homes of the four children before taking them away. And that's all for today from the IMEMC News. This was the Monday, September 28, 2015, news roundup from the occupied Palestinian territories. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. Today's report has been brought to you by George Shmawi and me, Ghassan Banoura.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Robin Ryan, Rosalind Scott, Ryan Fritcher, and Don Zur. The producer is Doug McVeigh. Special thanks to Joe Vance. Our engineer is Danielle Parks. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Jenka Soderberg. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews, or look for us on Twitter at KBOO News. You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River 91.9 FM. I'm Doug McVeigh.
And I'm Rosalind Scott. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO, at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, on the Abe and Joe Talk Show, the hosts welcome affordable housing advocate Leah Greenwood and Jess Larson from Welcome Home to talk about efforts to attain affordable housing opportunities for all Portland Metro residents. At 9 on Alternative Radio, social justice activist and author David Corton speaks on a news story. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, hear Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. At 11 on Stage and Studio, host D. May Roberts features Iris Goodwin's How We Got On, the season opener for Portland Playhouse. We'll hear from director Jen Rowe, music director Mike Crenshaw, and actress Ithaca. At 11:30 on Art Focus, host Joseph Galavan interviews Stuart Harvey on Burning Man, Pas de Deux. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. You rock.
And stay tuned now. And stay tuned now for an interview with Daphne Wysham of the Center for Sustainable Economy about Shell's decision to stop drilling for oil in the Arctic. Good night, Rosalind.
Good night, Doug.
Good night, Danielle.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community. To you.
The Shell Oil Company has announced that it will stop drilling for oil in the Arctic. The company said that it made this decision because it failed to find enough crude oil to justify the cost of exploration and drilling. Shell has reportedly spent about $7 billion exploring for oil in Alaskan waters and it's estimated that pulling out of Alaska's Chukchi Sea will cost the company another $4.1 billion. Shell also complained that the regulatory process was too restricted and complicated. The U.S. Department of the Interior did determine in June that laws to protect wildlife in the region prevented Shell from drilling with two rigs at the same time in close proximity to each other. But that's not the whole story. In May and June, environmental activists in Seattle mounted protests against Shell. The protesters in Seattle used kayaks to mount a floating blockade of Shell drilling rigs in Elliott Bay, which is home to the port of Seattle. Then in July, kayaktivists and others here in Portland held a week of protests that succeeded in delaying the progress of Shell's ship, the MSV Fenica, as it made its way to port for repairs before heading north to Alaska. Those are reasons why environmental activists in the Pacific Northwest and around the nation, as well as Native American leaders, are claiming victory and applauding Shell's move. Daphne Wisham is the Director of Climate and Energy Programs for the Center for Sustainable Economy and a part of the Climate Action Coalition. We spoke with Daphne earlier today to find out more about Shell's decision, about the role that environmental activism played, and about the future of environmental action in the fossil fuel industry. Daphne, Shell Oil announced today that they are stopping their Arctic oil exploration and drilling. They say it's because they're not finding enough oil, it's too expensive, and the regulatory process is too complicated. Do you think they're being truthful?
Well, let's just step back a bit and imagine Shell saying they pulled out of the Arctic because of all of the protests that have been dogging them around the world. Of course, they would never admit to that because that would encourage more such protests. We do know that the price of oil being below $50 a barrel is making it uneconomical for Shell to drill in the Arctic at this moment in time. It's just simply too costly and too dangerous. But we also know that we cost them quite a bit in terms of their reputation with our protests here in Portland against the Seneca that was in town to get fixed after the icebreaker got damaged, as well as in Seattle around the Polar Pioneer. So their reputation has probably been tarnished for quite some time as a result of their decision to go ahead and drill in a region where, had they drilled, there was a virtual certainty that there would be a major spill and the people of the Arctic would pay the highest price, but all of us would pay a high price with runaway climate change.
I regret that I'm not as fully informed on Arctic oil exploration as I should be, since I live here in the Pacific Northwest. Is Shell one of the main companies active up there, or who else?
Shell is the only company active in the Arctic right now. Every other corporation and country has decided not to drill. We have heard from the Department of Interior that it's just too risky, that there is a 75% chance of a major spill once drilling is underway in that part of the world, and the likelihood of cleaning up a spill in the Arctic, it's just virtually impossible to clean up. So Shell was out there on a limb, and it looks like they've decided it was just too dangerous to their reputation, and they've pulled back.
Now, I presume you're going to keep up the pressure. If the price of oil goes up, there's always the possibility that Shell might change its mind. Still, what do you think we're looking at for the near future, say the next couple of years?
Well, for the foreseeable future, we, as the Climate Action Coalition, we came together and won our battle against the Pembina propane terminal. We also were calling for Columbus Day to be changed to Indigenous People Day, and we're declaring victory. The mayor of Portland is about to announce that, which is just a wonderful victory for all of us. And moving forward in terms of our work In solidarity with Native Americans, we're calling for upholding Native American treaty rights and no new fossil fuel infrastructure on the entire West Coast and no Arctic drilling, period. And we're calling on Obama to make sure that this sort of hazardous drilling never happens again and call on all of the other Arctic nations to declare the Arctic off limits.
The Kai activists, the other protests around the Shell drilling, this success, do you think that's going to inspire folks to be active in environmental issues beyond just this campaign?
Well, it should inspire them. I mean, all you have to do is look at the protests against the Keystone XL pipeline, the protests against the Pembina propane terminal, the numerous protests that have resulted in rejections of terminals on the Columbia River and up in Washington. When people come together like this and work together and put their bodies on the line in some cases, we win. This is what people power looks like. And this is the kind of action we're going to be having to take if we're going to keep 80% of the proven fossil fuel reserves in the ground, as the scientists tell us we have to do to avoid dangerous climate change, and keep all unproven reserves, as in Arctic oil, completely off limits. That's the only way we can avoid dangerous climate change. And we really do require people power, and that's what works. So I hope it does inspire people to get more involved.
Do you think we're close to a tipping point as far as concern for the environment versus corporate greed? Obviously, we need to keep pushing, whether we are or not. But do you think we're close to that?
I'm very hopeful. Just in the last few days, we had China announcing that they would no longer provide public funds for carbon-intensive projects anywhere in the world. And they are an enormous source of finance, both through their own development bank and multilaterally through the new development bank that was created with the BRIC countries, as well as through the World Bank and other and the Asian Development Bank. So the fact that China is basically single-handedly saying we will not support carbon-intensive fossil fuel projects like tar sands and coal sends a huge message to the rest of the world. Then shortly thereafter, Brazil announced that it was going to cut its emissions by 43% by 2030. Now, this only gets us to 3 degrees Celsius. It gets us nowhere near where we need to go, which is a rise of temperatures of no more than 1.5 degrees Celsius, or about 4 degrees Fahrenheit, which 3 to 4 degrees Fahrenheit, which is still could be very dangerous. So we've got quite a ways to go, but we are on track to see some major emissions reductions if all of these countries keep their pledges. And the Pacific Northwest plays an absolutely pivotal role in all of this, because we have 5 times the Keystone XL pipeline coming through our communities in pipelines, on rail cars, and we absolutely can't allow that to happen. So I'm very optimistic, but it does require everybody to engage to keep a healthy planet for future generations.
Now, here in Oregon, here in Portland, what particular projects should we be focusing on as far as the fossil fuel activism is concerned?
Yeah, well, there's several exciting things that are coming up in the next few weeks, one of which is the mayor is developing a fossil fuel export policy, and we encourage everybody to write the mayor, write your elected officials, and let them know how strongly you feel about Portland taking a lead in essentially banning all new, not just new fossil fuel infrastructure, but fossil fuel exports. So that's item number one. Item number two, in early November, Portland is going to be hosting the mayors of all of the major West Coast cities for a summit on climate change. This is before the big summit in Paris, And again, we're going to be urging activists up and down the West Coast to say no to new fossil fuel infrastructure, to keep fossil fuels in the ground, and to move towards the clean energy economy, the clean infrastructure we desperately need, both in this city and in other major cities up and down the West Coast. So the Climate Action Coalition is deeply engaged in all of this. It includes quite a few groups that were part of the protests around the Seneca blockade, and we're engaging in these two issues as well moving forward.
Now, Daphne, any closing thoughts for the listeners? And please tell us where, tell people where they can find out more about the Climate Action Coalition and the work that you're doing.
Yeah, well, you know, the Climate Action Coalition is a largely volunteer-run group of folks. You can find out more about us at climate-action-coalition.org. On the website, you can see all of the different organizations that are part of it. You can also visit our website, which is sustainable-economy.org, and learn more about the work of the Center for Sustainable Economy and our energy and climate work there. But, you know, I think this is an enormously important day, an enormously important victory for people of power, for paddlers, kayaktivists. And I want to thank everybody who came out and joined in our protest against the Seneca. We clearly have had an impact, and it's a global impact. And I know that the people of the Arctic who depend on the fish and all of the subsistence, their subsistence livelihoods are affected by whether or not there's drilling, are deeply grateful. So all of us are thankful to everybody who engaged with us.
Daphne, thank you so much. Again, I've been speaking with Daphne Wysham. She's the Director of Climate and Energy Programs at the Center for Sustainable Economy and a part